Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. My name is Patricia Modis. I'm the Transitions OT, and I'm your host. Today, I am super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Elizabeth de Blasio. Liz is an uncommon occupational therapist who focuses on sustainability through caregiver training. Liz grew up in New York City and graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology and Dance from Adelphi University. She later received her Master of Science degree in Occupational Therapy from Columbia University. She has worked as an OT in school and home settings for over 13 years, providing therapy for children with special needs. Through these experiences, she's worked closely with families and have learned the power of collaboration. Her goal was always to foster independence in the children she works with and to empower parents and caregivers to be active members in their child's therapeutic process. Her passion for educating has grown stronger through various experiences. As an adjunct professor at Long Island University for 7 years, she gained invaluable experience in educating about sensory processing, behavioral techniques, and the therapeutic process. Educating others has invigorated Liz and allowed her to share her passion for OT in a truly meaningful way. Some of her most profound work has been with a nonprofit organization to provide sustainable therapy and design training materials for children with disabilities and their caregivers in developing countries. She has gained a wealth of cultural competence through these experiences, which continues to drive her professional practice. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you Liz de Blasio. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, Patricia. Thank you.
Hello. I'm so happy to have you on the show and to have you talk a little bit about your uncommon OT work, particularly in parent caregiving, caregiving training, and also with the work that you're doing in developing countries in terms of volunteerism. But before we delve into all of that, I'd love to have you tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about Liz.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you. Happy to be here. A little bit about me. I think that bio is pretty explanatory. So I grew up in the city. I was a dancer my whole life. Always had such an amazing passion for dance and still do. And so I started college as a dance major and then sort of, you know, and I was like, girl from the city, just wanted to dance all the time. And then I just had a really real moment in college. I believe it was my junior year. I don't know if other people can identify with this, but I was like, well, what am I actually doing with my life? And so I became very, very interested in science, psychology. Through a series of a bunch of events, I found my way to OT. And quite honestly, I think my first day of OT school, it still wasn't exactly clear what it was until it's interesting. It's we used to joke it's the other therapy.
Yes.
And once I really dove into the program, I had amazing experiences at Columbia. And once I really figured it out, because it was quite a road to figure it out for me, I really was like, wow, this is what I want to be doing. This is what I love. I think being an adjunct professor for me was really profound. I think I wasn't sure that I would love it the way that I did. I really just developed a good relationship with my students. I was really passionate about teaching. You know, I would spend my whole day working with little ones for like, you know, crazy hours all day working with my little ones. And then I would go to teach my students. Sometimes I thought I had no energy left in me and I would just get in front of the classroom and felt really passionate about educating them and really passionate about like, wow, these students will be our colleagues at some point. And I just really want to send them out into the OT world in a really positive and responsible way. And I just was very passionate about it. Yeah. And then the other experiences, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
Well, thanks for sharing a little bit of that about you. I can relate to both, right? OT school was a journey for me as well. and not really also exactly knowing which way it would lead, but in the end it really did, you know. And reflecting on it now, you kind of see the signs clearer, right? Even though back then there were not signs at all. They were just kind of obstacles or hurdles. But now I look at them as signs, and it really was a journey. And, you know, so for you, Liz, I'm so happy to hear that you're, you know, it sounds like your work as an adjunct professor also kind of cultivated your love for teaching and, you know, really instilling information and knowledge in individuals, not just OTs, but also parents, right, is the work that you're doing now. And I think that's tapping into, you know, just our own sort of personal strengths, right? If we feel good when we're doing something, I think that really elevates our work even further.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more. I actually, when I had, it was a friend of mine that was like, you should try being an adjunct professor. And I was like, me? And like my first day I walked in, I was like, what am I? I must be crazy. What am I doing? And then it was like a light switch. I was like, wow, I feel like a superhero. Like this feels so yeah, it was interesting. So it's like you throw yourself into it and then you realize it's your passion.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, that's what I mean about some of them might seem like hurdles in the beginning, but in actuality, it's masked really as, you know, it's just masked as a hurdle, but it's actually a passion. And it's not until you try it that you would know.
Yeah, definitely. Right? And
so, all good stuff. So, Liz, tell us a little bit about the Uncommon OT work that you're currently doing. I know it's not just one, and it's sort of has two branches, but it's all sort of centered around the same theme. So I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that, who you're serving, right, in both situations, and what needs are you addressing?
Yeah, definitely. So a few years ago, I found a very small grassroots nonprofit organization, and they are called Therapists Beyond Borders. The focus of the organization is sustainable therapy through caregiver training. You know, really the mission is to empower communities that care for individuals with disabilities around the world. And, you know, the minute I met the founder, so I actually went to, I found her on Instagram through a friend, just such an unconventional way, but she was like, I think you would love this. And it's kind of a sweet story. And then before I knew it, I was getting on a plane to go to South Africa for the WFOT conference, which is where, you know, she was the founder of the organization, was sort of starting out. And I was just so in line with that idea of sustainable therapy. And, you know, a lot of what our conversations were there and have been are around, you know, trying to, you know, not be involved in voluntourism, air quotes. So, which is really just sort of, while people mean well, when they do volunteer experiences, sometimes it turns out to be a little bit not responsible when you're going in and out of these, you know, underserved communities with very fragile people, you know, physically fragile, emotionally fragile, and you're sort of just in their lives for a week and you leave. So that was really, you know, what Therapists Beyond Borders is aiming to not do. And also to, through trainings of the caregivers, really empower them so that, hey, what if they don't, you know, what if they don't need people involved as often? What if they don't need as many volunteers there?
Yes.
Because they can really be sustainable and they can really, you know, follow through on what they, you know, what therapy we're providing for them, but things that are really, you know, that they really need, that they've identified as a need also.
Yes. It just, so much of it just intertwines with occupational therapy to me, right? In terms of helping somebody build the skills to be able to perform the task themselves versus doing it for them, right? Yeah. And really helping them figure out, okay, what is it that you need so that you can do this on your own? And the second thing that popped out was COVID, right? In terms of oh my gosh, then all of these volunteers were not able to show up or cancel all of their plans. And then what happens to these families and these communities? So can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, definitely. So previous to COVID, I had been to Kenya and to India, and there were two sites that we had worked with where there were children with disabilities and various special needs and caregivers. So they were all separated from their homes and had lived at these two sites. And I had done needs assessments there. So basically, a needs assessment, meaning I'm not just going in and telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. It's more being culturally sensitive, being aware of what's important to them, you know, not just what, you know, our standards are in America. Well, hey, they're very different in different countries.
Yes.
And just the way they view independence is not the mm-hmm. way we view independence, mm-hmm. which is huge in the OT world, you know, so yes. that was sort of like a hard pill for all of us to swallow. But really, really a great learning experience. And I helped to co-design a wheelchair transfer training, which we ended up starting to do in Kenya, which was really nice.
Okay.
You know, to be able to do that and feel success with that. And then there was COVID. So in COVID, the organization transitioned to really having more of a mental health focus, where, you know, acknowledging that COVID really has been and still is a mental health crisis. And mm-hmm. thinking about, you know, how can we still work with, you know, developing countries to help them be sustainable also in terms of mental health. So, you know, the people that are responsible for caring for people with COVID, for caring with people, you know, with various conditions, disabilities, all of that, you know, what are they also doing to take care of their own mental health?
Yes.
The organization did end up hiring a physiotherapist in Kenya, which is, that was a huge deal because it gives boots on the ground. And again, mm-hmm. it makes them sustainable. So it's not us having to go in there. It's somebody else being there who's a native of that
yes.
country. And so he's been doing some mental health trainings, and he actually recently did one in Rwanda, which is great because another big, you know, goal of the organization is to expand to other countries.
Yes.
And now they're focusing on new trainings for adults and for children to educate about various disabilities. So what are the disabilities? What are the prognosis? What is, you know, the etiology of certain mm-hmm. things? So really, again, empowering caregivers to be knowledgeable about what the people in their lives, you know, what it is that they're going through and what, you know, what their challenges are and how they can be a helpful member of their team, you know.
Yes. I love this work that you're doing, and I have 1,000 different questions. First, I guess just to kind of set the stage clear for our listeners. So you've worked in developing countries, Kenya, India are examples. So when you go into these countries, who do you serve? You mentioned children and families. How do these families find you?
So we, the founder of the organization had vetted these two specific sites to make sure that they were, you know, housing children responsibly. Because unfortunately, there are a lot of places internationally that don't. So mm-hmm. she did the work to vet the sites. I went on those trips with those sites already, you know, that we were already working with those sites. So I had went in with her. Yeah, so these two sites were already sites that we were working with. And through the founder, you know, doing a lot of work to keep up communication with them and a lot of work to vet them, those were the two sites primarily that we worked with. And they both were homes to various children with various disabilities, various ages, who had been separated from their families.
Ah, okay. So who were considered to be their caregivers?
They are angels and saints. And I really mean that. I mean, yeah, so the caregivers are just these incredible people that are there, you know, all day, all night. Obviously they take shifts, you know, but they are people in the local communities that are there to be the primary caregivers for these children.
Okay. And they're not staff, so they're not getting paid for this?
Oh, no. I believe they are staff, yes.
Okay. So they are staff, and their job is to basically care for these children who are in a residential facility, it sounds like.
These children have been separated from their homes, and they are living in these facilities full time.
Okay. And what are the age ranges of these children? Is it like, I know in America we think 18, right? Like below 18, but a 5-year-old versus a 17-year-old are two different animals to me.
Yeah, no, definitely. A wide range of ages. There are a few really little ones, you know, babies. Mm. Again, depending on any given time, you know, sometimes there's turnover. Yeah, we worked with very young children up to usually around the age of 18. There were a few children in Kenya that were old. Well, actually, they were adults that were in their 20s, in their young 20s to mid 20s.
Fascinating. All right. So thanks for giving us an idea of, you know, what the setting might look like for you. I know that your uncommon OT work in these developing countries have also inspired you to start something here. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, definitely. I would say feeling excited about the idea of empowering the caregivers in these developing countries was a big source of my inspiration. And I think also the work that I've done here. You know, I've worked in a school for 14 years, and then I've also done early intervention, and I've done home care, I've done evaluations. And when you're a pediatric therapist, you really do interact with the parents and caregivers of the children. You know, they're sort of like the main gatekeeper.
Yes.
So
they should always be part of the treatment plan.
Yes, exactly. And I think right there is you hit the nail on the head where I always felt that way, and the feeling has just grown stronger and stronger. And I really can say through my experiences that I have found that the parents that are involved in the therapeutic process have the children that always make some sort of progress, mm-hmm. you know, some sort of improvement, versus the parents that are not as involved. A lot of times improvement is a lot slower.
Yes.
And again, kind of a broad generalization, every child is different, response to therapy is different, of course, but I really can say that there is, when the parents are involved, that you tend to see greater success. And yes. I think just feeling my own frustrations a lot of times with families that weren't as involved, and what a challenge that can be from the therapist's perspective, that I really feel driven, you know, to reach the parents on a different level and to really get them more involved.
I love that. I agree completely. I'm not a pediatric therapist, but I do understand. I've worked with families, and it's a unit, right? We're talking about a family unit that coexists together in the same environment and space. Particularly from the parents' perspective, they have this role of being the one to provide the structure, being the one to provide food, access to everything, right? It's so important that we have their buy-in, so mm-hmm. to speak, when it comes to the goals and all the activities that we're working on. So I love that your work in developing countries has inspired you to kind of, I mean, it was always something that you knew, but then it's something that you kind of want to focus more on today. So can you tell us about what you're offering?
Yeah, definitely. So I have started a brand new business that I'm feeling very excited about. And I am seeing children, you know, I am still a pediatric therapist. I do still have some clients that I'm seeing one-on-one, but I really want to focus heavily on caregiver training workshops. And so I am hoping to provide education and to provide skills, let's say, for parents who have children with special needs to really, you know, help their children meet their OT goals, also to improve their quality of lives for themselves, for their children, for their families, thereby in a way making my job a little easier, which sounds funny.
I think it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's not about me, but it is a win-win. And it also is, you know, maybe your child does not need therapy for all the years he or she is in school. Maybe they don't, you know. And of course, every child is different and every situation is different. But I also really want parents to feel empowered. And I think that's important. And I've also seen, you know, the emotional side of having a child with special needs. I've been in parents' homes. You see a lot of things when you're that intimate, you know, in an intimate setting with families.
Yes.
I've seen the tears. I've seen the fighting. I've seen the stress and what it can really do to a family when, you know, you have a child with special needs. And really, I want to be a support system and really help parents to feel empowered, you know, that through knowledge that maybe everything doesn't have to feel so out of control all the time.
Yes. And particularly in these developing countries, right, where there may not be as much access to information like we have here with, you know, being able to just Google anything. So I love that motivation. I love the mission that you have and the vision that you have in terms of what you would like to offer and really how it can benefit the families that you serve. Can you tell us a little bit about, just maybe like a typical day? I know that we're talking about two different things, like, but maybe touch upon each of them. Like, what would we see in a typical kind of caregiving training or caregiving information session that you hope will be sustainable over time, right? Or after that moment that you do that training?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think depending on amount of time of the training, I think I want to, you know, be realistic that parents are often spread thin. So really ideally doing a training maybe for an hour and a half max. And I think with that amount of time, just because of how in-depth a lot of, you know, OT practice areas are and a lot of things that we specifically deal with, it's like you can't explain it in 5 minutes.
Yes. And you want to leave time for questions too,
definitely,
right?
Yeah. Definitely. And I was going to say that that's also so important because you could just throw all the information at someone and then be overwhelmed, or you can take a step back and give small bits of information at a time and really help them to digest the information and ask questions and, you know, really just be more clear on what it is that you are, you know, trying to educate about. So I think that being said, you know, really trying to focus my trainings on one subject at a time, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like we all know, or at least in the therapy world, sensory processing, right? And it's something that's just so massive. It's like it so many. Yeah. It's so
Where
many
do you even words. Begin? Yeah.
Exactly.
But like, those are also big words, right? Like sensory processing. What does that mean to a lot of folks who don't have the clinical training
Yeah. And when you're talking to parents who don't have the training and probably already feel overwhelmed, I think just being really in tune to how you give them the information is important as well, you know?
Yes.
Like, okay, let's really do baby steps so that you can wrap your brain around this, because I've been doing it and talking about it for years. That doesn't mean, you know, for me, I can talk about it all day long, but I do acknowledge that it's something that's not the easiest thing to understand a lot of times. So,
yes,
you know, really so trying to go one topic at a time, hoping to do, you know, and obviously whatever parents would find that information meaningful, depending on their own child, you know, I would hope that they would join workshops that feel relevant for them.
Yes.
And I also really love the idea of building community too. So, you know, even having parents see that they're not on an island by themselves dealing with these stressful things. So, oh, there's other parents out there that, you know, have children similar to mine or have, you know, the same thoughts and feelings that I may have, you know, so yes. Hopefully allowing them to communicate with each other too could be helpful and to, you know, could make them feel a little bit more supported.
Yes. So that sounds really powerful. You're kind of creating this very safe space for folks to ask questions, for folks to, yeah, just bring up any types of concerns, right? And what a great position for an OT to be in, because you have the lens required for such a thing. Like you're assessing the child's needs, but then you're also assessing where the parents or the caregivers are at, right?
Yeah, and, yeah. And I love that you use the term safe space, because I really, you know, I really do want them to feel that, you know, I want them to feel that, like, you know, that they're heard, that they're understood. And again, they're not just dealing with this on their own.
Yeah. And no one's judging, right? Because I feel like in my work with parents, they're very reluctant to ask questions because they feel like they will be judged based on, I don't know, how they ask the question or why are they even asking the question. So I always preface all of my groups with that, you know, every question is a good question. Don't, you know, if you're not even sure about how to ask the question, just start, just try. Yeah. And then we'll get there together.
Yeah. I mean, it's sensitive stuff. It's vulnerable stuff. You know, it's like, it's people sort of putting themselves out there too, and not yes. wanting to seem like they don't know enough, or not wanting to seem like, you know, they don't have everything all put together every day. And in yes. reality, none of us do. You know, yes. So, yeah, it's true.
So thanks for sharing with us a little bit about, you know, some of the concepts, some of the ideas that you may work with some of the caregivers that you work with. It sounds like there's a large psychosocial aspect. There's a large aspect of really looking at the big picture, right? And I mean, these moms or these caregivers, because they could be dads too, have a variety of roles, I'm sure. And I'm also just thinking about these developing countries and how some of those roles might be just different, right? Or just, you know, not interpreted maybe differently compared to the roles that we have here in the United States. So again, having your lens as an OT and having sort of like this cultural competence going into these settings, I think just benefits everybody as a whole. So can you talk a little bit about, just some of the OT skills that you feel have really just helped, you know, really just supported you in these two uncommon roles that you have?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. I'm going to turn my light on because I'm losing daylight.
Oh, you're in Eastern time.
I'm like, at least the days are getting a little longer. What are my skills was the question that I'm.
Yeah. Like, what OT skills can you think of that really stick out that you think have really helped you in both of these uncommon OT roles that you have?
I think this is a human role more than an OT role, but I think, of course, I'll be a cheerleader about OT all day long. I think we are specifically very good at this, you know, sort of not assuming, sort of like, it doesn't matter what I want for you in your life. What do you want? And I think mm-hmm. that's a really important skill to have, is to really just be in tune with, you know, what exactly is it that this person needs and wants in order to be able to live their lives better, in order yes. to function better. And I think that that's really the heart and soul of OT. But I think sometimes, oh, I'll speak for myself, you know, I can feel myself going into just like hardcore clinical mode, I call it, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, let me take a step back sometimes and really like not assume that that's going to be important to this person.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're working with other cultures, even, you know, yes, my international work, but also here mm-hmm. and also being in New York City my whole yes. life, like, I don't think you can name a culture that I haven't worked with. So I think being really in tune with cultural differences, and again, not assuming that you know what's best for your client, and really just doing like the investigative work to say, like, how can I really be a good therapist for this client?
Yes.
So I think
I love,
I think
I love that. I love that highlight in one of our, you know, really special, I think that's one of our sort of secret sauces, is our ability to really look from the client's lens, right? And put hours aside, but that also takes, that takes some time to really refine, right? And to really feel comfortable. And it sounds like you're in that place. So I congratulate you on, yeah, just being in this place where you feel like you're doing really meaningful work, right? And work that you feel is really impacting not just you as a person, like, you know, something that's intertwined with your values, but also impacting communities, not just of today, but hopefully, you know, as this community progresses into the future with the sustainable training that you're providing them.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm trying to think about a second skill too. I'm like, oh, no, there's so many. And I don't mean that like, you know, I know everything, but I mean it just like my experiences have been so vast, which is amazing.
Yes.
But I think because I really do heavily focus on a sensory processing model, you know, on a sensory based therapy model. And I say that because I really think, and again, you know, we won't explain what sensory processing is because we don't have enough time. But
we can add a link to our show notes that has a little info on that.
Perfect. But yeah, so I really do believe in a sensory approach. And I think I've sort of really learned how to use a sensory approach regardless of equipment, in a way where I've been in many environments where I don't necessarily have all the beautiful sensory equipment that I want to give a child sensory input. But
yes,
I have become, you know, pretty good at figuring out how to do that without the fancy equipment. And I think really that also calls to, you know, that also really shows how sensory processing really is a big part of our lives every day. As grownups, as adults, special needs, typically developing, we all have sensory experiences every day.
Yes.
And I think I've really gained the experience in knowing how to, you know, recognize what's happening from a sensory perspective in an environment, and also being able to use myself therapeutically to give the right sensory input.
Yes, I love that. There's another OT skill, you know, it's, you're blending in your OT knowledge about sensory processing and your creativity in terms of, all right, what do we have in their house, right? Or what do we have in this, I don't know, community, right? Or I don't know what they have, but I know they don't have putty and things like that. So
it really does depend where you are. But it's like, yeah, sometimes you just walk into a room and you're like, all right, I'm going to just work with it.
Yes.
You know? And it's so everywhere. It's everywhere. It's here. It's, you know, it's everywhere where you're just kind of like, oh, all right, I'm just going to figure this out and just get creative. But it's also why I really love OT, because I think we have a lot of room to do that. You know, we have a lot of room to get creative. And also specifically working with kids, you know, their main occupation is play.
Yes.
And a lot of times you're like, they don't care. Like, what? I'm just going to, let's pretend we're like walking across a tightrope and like sharks are going to eat us. You know, it's like things that you just make up the most ridiculous thing and kids are like, yeah, you know, which
that sounds like a much more fun session to me, if you ask me.
Exactly. So sometimes you don't need all the bells and whistles. You can just be creative and really get part of, well, what am I here to do? You know, and like all they want to do is play.
Yes. Well, can we, I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk money, right? I know we're talking about two different branches here. So in terms of your private practice and your caregiver training, how do you charge for your services? Guessing insurance is not an option in this case.
Yeah, so I'm going to just blow the whistle on all the insurance companies out there.
Blow away.
I mean, it's just some of the systems sometimes I want to bang my head against the wall. But truth be told, insurance companies just make it so complicated as a practitioner to sign up. So I'm sort of in a point where I'm like, sure, I would love to do that if I, you know, if it was a little bit easier to do, sadly. So I am not registered with insurance companies right now. Maybe if that changes in the future, I would love to do that. But now primarily just private pay.
Okay, got it.
For my clients and also for the parent training.
Okay. And what is your general main source of referral at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm actually working out of a psychologist practice at the moment as I'm sort of getting my feet wet and developing the business. And so while I am still an independent provider, I do get a lot of referrals from them, which is really nice because they are the owner of the company is a psychotherapist, but she also is very in tune with sensory processing and a sensory approach to therapy, which is interesting. I think she might be the only psychologist I've personally ever met who has that, which is cool. So it feels sort of like she speaks my language.
Okay.
I love that you found
each other.
Yeah, me too. I'm operating for private clients out of her space. Also in some instances going into children's homes.
Okay.
Ideally probably wanting to have my own space at some point. And also, you know, the parent training, I think the beauty of it is to do a lot of it remotely.
Yes.
I know parents usually, again, are strapped for time, but also I think it's an opportunity for me to reach beyond my community if I can do these workshops virtually and, you know, we don't have to be pigeonholed into wherever our physical locations are.
Absolutely. And what I love about virtual things and virtual events and virtual things, right? And whether it's a group or not, is that sometimes you can record them, right? Depending on what everyone is comfortable with. And someone can actually still have access to it, even if they're not actually there during that hour. So I just love that because I know I've taken advantage of that myself just for a variety of different things. So I'm all about options and, you know, giving people access to that information. So whether it's recorded or it's live, I love it. So thank you for
the silver lining of the remote stuff, right? It's like we can sort of capture it in time.
Yes. And also us from like a therapist perspective, I feel like I can be in more places.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I kind of love that idea. Like, let me talk to people from all over the place, you know?
Yes. So definitely blurs the, you know, the border lines. So thank you for, you know, giving us some detail about all of that. Super, super helpful. Are there any, or would you like to share with us some recent lows or challenges and recent highs or successes that you may have had in any of those roles?
Well, there was this thing called COVID. Not sure if you heard of it.
Yes. Heard of it. That one's just throwing a wrench in everyone's plans.
Well, it's interesting because it threw a wrench in, I guess, what I thought, you know, what my life was at the time, which felt, you know, and still does. I'm not going to make light of, you know, we're still in it and it's still a challenge. But, you know, in the beginning, it was like, oh, wow, I have to do therapy behind a screen with my kids who are, you know, they're very involved. A lot of my kids where it was hard for me to really accomplish anything sometimes in a 30-minute session through a screen.
Or provide that sensory input that you were talking about, right? Yeah. It has to be so modified.
Yeah. So there are some sensory things I can work through a screen, but yeah, primarily, you know, the sense of just like, you know, the body movements and, you know, and I did a lot of yoga with my kids through the screen. I did a lot of like, okay, let's get up from our desks and move our bodies, you know, but it was really putting on a whole new hat without any training or any warning.
Yes.
So I would have to say that that's been the biggest challenge, but through all of that, you know, it's, I think with me being all of a sudden in this virtual world. And then I actually decided to leave the city, which is where I was still living. And so I think my pace of life has slowed down a lot, which is nice. And so COVID sort of forced the change for me, but I really didn't. Well, I think I always had the dream to do this business and it was always brewing in the back of my mind. Now it's a reality. So I guess if we're looking at silver linings, I have COVID to thank for that. But I think from a real, just like, let's be honest perspective, I think what I learned was I could have a little more work-life balance. And I think, well, I know that we've all felt that, during COVID. And I think a lot of people have left their jobs because of that. And, we know that in the data that's existing right now is that a lot of people have made these like major life changes. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm one of them. It's like, I still can't say it and believe it, but here I am. it's a good way to really, something that could be a bum situation and say, okay, well, how am I going to change this? And how am I going to adapt to this? And I guess it was just sort of the push for me to actually start thinking about doing something new that I've always sort of wanted to do.
You've pivoted, right? You've pivoted based on the circumstances in your life, the society's circumstances, right? And you adapted well, just as a true OT should, right? Because we're experts in adapting to a variety of situations as things evolve, right? And I love that you found this happy place, right? You don't feel burnt out, right? You're doing something that's still meaningful to you. You actually have time to cultivate basically something that sounds like been a burning desire of yours for a little while now, yeah. But just never really had the opportunity or the time to execute it. So Here you are.
Yeah. And I think really primarily the biggest challenge, the biggest hurdle is the fear, right? And I think we all feel that when you go from, I was employed in a school for almost 14 years now. And when you just have like on a very like real level, like a steady income and, a place that you report to every day.
Yes.
And, people around you and just this whole system that you've become part of for so long. It's very jarring to enter something that's completely different from that. And yeah, I think the challenge is fear, I guess, just like fear of failure, mm-hmm. fear of like, and imposter syndrome, which
yes,
we all have on some level, like at our, do I have this knowledge? Can I do this work? Can I, can I actually be, start my own business? Like, the little voice in your head is like, what are you, crazy girl?
Yeah. like you said earlier, who, me? What are you talking about?
Exactly. I think that's perfect. I've had a lot of those like, who, me, what moments.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
I had one of those recently, but I want to know, how did you talk back to this fear and to this imposter syndrome? What advice do you have for our listeners who have these silly voices in their heads speaking to them too?
A lot of reading and a lot of talking to other people who have done that, have been in similar situations where they were walking into something that felt so scary and uncertain. Mm-hmm. And I call it like the jumping off a cliff. And then what I tell, what I remind myself is that I have a parachute. So yeah, okay, I'm jumping off a cliff, but oh wait, I do have all these skills. And oh wait, I do have all these experiences. And I do have a pretty good network of people in my life. And I think just being willing to fail and just being willing to, not saying that you will, but just knowing that, okay, well, if I do, is it really the worst case scenario? Is it really the worst thing? Or like, can I pick myself up pretty easily and try something different?
Yeah.
And I think when you approach it with that feeling of like, okay, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. but a really meaningful tool that I've also used is journaling, where I force myself to write down the positives of this big change. And I think that anybody can, you know, anybody that's gone through this, and I guess this is good advice for somebody else that I have found helpful. And of course I have the pros, I mean, you know, the negatives and the cons and the, all the things, like, you know, the nasty.
Those are the voices. Yeah.
Right. So I try to ignore those and I just say, okay, well, let's look at just the positives. And there's something for me about physically writing them down and spending that moment just myself with a journal and a pen in my hand and just writing down those things, like in a list format. And then I've actually been reading them every day. So I will just go back to that. So it almost becomes like affirmations, but just going back and looking at, oh, right, this is why I'm doing this. And these are the positives. And, you know, everything will have negatives, but let's just focus on the positives and really be in the moment as if everything that I'm going to gain from it, I'm already living.
Mm-hmm. I love that piece of advice. It sounds like a really powerful exercise, you know, and you're building it into your routine. And I think that's the power. That's when affirmations become really powerful. It's when it becomes part of our routine and it's automatic, right? But that's such great advice. Are there any common myths or misconceptions that you would like to call out about any of the uncommon roles that you currently have?
Yeah, sure. I think when you're in private practice, I think sometimes there's another nagging voice around your rates and what you are charging for your services. And I think sometimes, you know, you need a second to remind yourself of what your skills are and of what your, you know, quote unquote worth is. Knowing that when you have your heart and soul invested in this therapeutic process with the family, that it's okay to make a living, you know, it's okay to, it's okay to name your rate and stick by your rate, because it's a lot of work. And it, we have specialized master's degrees. We have a very specific training and very specific, you know, in a very specific niche in a way. You know, I think just being really clear with setting, okay, this is my rate and I know why I'm charging this. And, you know, I also do need to make a living, and I think that there's value in naming your price and sticking to it in a way.
Yes.
And it's challenging. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, am I charging too much? Again, those are just like those nasty voices in your mind.
Yes. The ones that need to shut up.
Right. Exactly. I think that's really, I think we can have the power to say, like, well, this is what I charge for my services, and period.
Yes.
Know? Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. It's something that a lot of, I guess, non-insurance-based entrepreneurs, OT entrepreneurs, are really kind of, you know, torn about, right? I mean, we're helpers, so our idea is to help, and where we are trained, we're typically not charging like that for services, right?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people in, like, healthcare field say this, too. Like, we are viewed as healthcare providers doesn't mean that we don't need to collect a paycheck and still go home and support ourselves and our families, right? So it's like, yes, of course, at the core of my being, I am a caregiver, 100%. But, right, it's like, I think that that's a common thing. It's like, oh, but, you know, if you're a caregiver, then you just necessarily, like, you know, volunteer that your services, you know, or you don't charge a lot because you're a compassionate person. And of course, we're compassionate people, and we always will be.
Well, I love the work that you're doing. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. If we were interested in getting in touch with you, if you're interested in doing volunteerism and developing countries as an OT or as an OT student or even another healthcare professional, right? How do we find your organization, and how do we get in touch with you for questions and just insight and knowledge?
Yeah, great. So the nonprofit organization is called Therapists Beyond Borders. And so it's therapistsbeyondborders.org. And that's also, they're also Therapists Beyond Borders on Instagram. And I would definitely, you know, tell therapists to keep their eyes open for future volunteer experiences, which is really exciting. We're hoping to, you know, grow our volunteer base. And I just would encourage everyone to just follow along with the journey. Funding is also really big for the nonprofit. So, you know, we're always welcoming donations, always looking for funding partners. That's Therapists Beyond Borders. Is that, you know, that's the handle. That's where you can sort of keep in touch with everything that's going on there. And then as far as my business, my website is sensory-wise.com. That is a brand new website, but I have launched it, and I am, you know, all of my contact information is on there, and more thorough descriptions of what the services are that I provide, primarily evaluations and one-on-one services with children, and again, the caregiver training, which I really want to focus on.
So congratulations on launching your new website, your new business, and, you know, particularly with bridging that with the humanitarian work that you're doing in developing countries. I see a common theme in both of them, and obviously because that's where your passion sort of draws you. So I just, yeah, congratulations on being able to do both. And, you know, to me, that means that you're spending your time doing most of your time doing something that is really meaningful to you. And again, that's just a win-win situation for yourself, for the clients that you're working with, the caregivers or the parents of the clients that you're working with, and everybody at large. So congrats on that. And again, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.